is Davin's Den. Is Davin's Den.
And we are back. Thank you for hanging out with us in Davin's Den. We've already established I'll be starting a cult. You kids should sign up immediately. But now let's do some School of Fools. First story we have. Both stories tonight take place in Virginia, oddly enough. Virginia will be playing the role of Florida this evening. But this one's about merit awards. So here are the School of Fools.
A fool.
Alright, so let's just check the levels real quick. That's what the problem is. Alright, there we go. Bam. Alright. For years, two administrators at Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology, TJ, have been withholding notifications of National Merit Awards from the school's families, most of them Asian, thus denying students the rights to use their awards to boost their college admission prospects and earn scholarships. This episode has emerged amid the school district's new strategy of equal outcomes for every student without exception. School administrators, for instance, have implemented an equitable grading policy that eliminates zeros, gives students a grade of 50% just for showing up. Well, I mean, still not everybody the same. If somebody's getting a 50 and somebody's getting a 75, that's still not the same. But anyway. And it assigns a cryptic code of NTI for assignments not turned in. It's a race to the bottom. All right, that's not really a cryptic code if we know what it is. All right. You know, maybe whoever wrote this needs to go to a better school. I mean, Jesus Christ. But anyway. We'll continue. An intrepid Thomas Jefferson parent, and by that, this parent was a battleship, Shauna Yashir. actually, I stand corrected.
No body shaming.
No, I stand corrected. An aircraft carrier, not a battleship.
All right, there you go.
Yes. Shauna Yashir, a lawyer, uncovered the withholding of National Merit Awards since starting as a freshman at the school in September 2019. Her son, who is part Arab American, studied statistical analysis, literature reviews, and college-level science late into the night. This workload was necessary to keep him up to speed with the advanced studies at TJ, which U.S. News and World Report ranks as America's top school. Well, how'd he do, man? There you go. Last fall, along with about 1.5 million U.S. high school juniors, the Yashir team took the PSATs, which determines whether a student qualifies as a prestigious National Merit Scholar. When it came time to submit his college applications this fall, he didn't have a National Merit honor to report. But it wasn't because he hadn't earned the award. The National Merit Scholarship Corporation, a nonprofit based in Evanston, Illinois, had recognized him as a commended student in the top 3% nationwide. One of about 50,000 students earning that distinction. Principals usually celebrate National Merit Scholars with special breakfasts, award ceremonies, YouTube videos, a pat in the ass, press releases, and social media announcements. But TJ school officials had decided to withhold announcement of the award. We don't have time to make a YouTube video. Indeed, it turns out that the principal, Ann Bonitatibus, and the director of student services, Brandon Kosatka, have been withholding this information from families and the public for years, affecting the lives of at least 1,200 students over the principal's tenure of 5 years. Recognition by merit, National Merit opens the door to millions of dollars in college scholarships and 800 special scholarships from corporate sponsors. But in this principal's defense, I mean, she's already got a job. I learned 2 years after the fact that National Merit had recognized my son, a graduate of TJ's class of 2021, as a commended student in a September 10th, 2020 letter that National Merit sent to Bonitatibus. But the principal who lobbied that fall and nixed the school's merit-based admission test to increase diversity never told us about it. Parents from earlier years told me that she also didn't tell them about any commended student awards. One former student said he learned he had won the award through a random email from the school to a school district email account that students rarely check. The principal neither told his parents nor made a public announcement. Well, you know what? Sometimes secrets are nice. On September 16th of this year, National Merit sent a letter to Bonitas listing 240 students recognized as commended students or semifinalists. The letter included these words in bold type: please present the letters of commendation as soon as possible since it is the student's only notification and we can't be bothered if you fuck it up. National Merit hadn't included enough stamps. Really? Really? You got one job. You have one job. You're mailing a letter. You're an honor society. You're supposed to be the best of the best, and you can't do basic math. Ugh, you stink. National Merit hadn't included enough stamps on the package, but nevertheless, it got to Bonitas by mid-October, before the October 31st deadline for early acceptance to select colleges. In an email, Bonitas told Yasher that she had signed the certificates within 48 hours, but homeroom teachers didn't distribute the awards until Monday, November 14th, after the early application deadlines had passed. More high achievers. Teachers dropped their certificates unceremoniously on students' desk. Here you go, stupid. Keeping these certificates from students...
Like you're feeding cattle. Yeah,
yeah. Amuse yourself with this paper that's now useless.
I pictured them throwing that little shopper newspaper that nobody wants that gets stuck in your snowblower.
What is that? Get
into the driveway.
What is that called? The penny shopper?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not on my route. You had to hang the damn things or she'd yell at you when she went around to check.
Oh.
Keeping these certificates from students is theft by the state, says Yasher. Bonitas didn't notify parents or the public. What's more, it could be a civil rights violation, says local parent advocate Deborah Tisler. God, my eyes are already going. With most TJ students in a protected class of gifted students, most of them racial minorities, many with disabilities, and most coming from immigrant families whose parents speak English as a second language. It's just cruel, says Tisler. In a call with Yasher, Kosatka admitted that the decision to withhold information from parents and inform students in a low-key way was intentional. It's what we do here. We want to recognize students for who they are as individuals, and apparently intelligence is not as part of their individuality. Not focus on their achievements, because we all achieve the same. Everybody. Every one of us.
Everybody.
Because everybody's the principal at our school. Everyone's a principal. You're a principal, and you're a principal. We're all principals.
Yay!
It's just ridiculous. Like, they don't take this stuff to the logical conclusion. Because if there's no achievements, we don't need you, stupid. We don't need you.
The funny thing is, and they put, you know, and it's out of the whole article you read, the sentence that you read a paragraph ago spoke volumes. It's like, well, we want to recognize the individual achievement, which is their grades. I mean, you're not hurting their feelings. These are kids that worked hard for it. You're hiding this so everybody is equal. This smacks of socialism.
All right. Settle down there, you red wave. We want to recognize students for who they are as individuals, not focus on their achievements, he told her, claiming that he and the principal didn't want to hurt feelings of students who didn't get the award. A National Merit spokeswoman said that the organization's officials leave this honor exclusively to the high school officials to announce. Kosatka and Bonitas didn't respond to requests for comment. In a rare admission, Fabio Zuluaga, an assistant superintendent of Fairfax County Public Schools, told me that the school system has erred not telling students, the public and families about awards. It was a mistake, to be honest, Zuluaga said. It also isn't enough just to hand over a certificate. We have to do something special, he said. A commendation sends a very strong message to the kid, right? Your work is meaningful. If you work hard in life, there are good benefits from that. On Monday, December 12th, after getting caught, Kosatka sent an email to the parents saying of commended students, notifying them of the important recognition and saying, we're deeply sorry, my bad, for not sharing the news earlier. He claimed school officials would contact college admission offices to correct the record. Will you? Bonitas still hasn't publicly recognized the students or told parents from earlier years that their students won the awards, and she hasn't yet delivered the missing certificates. Virginia Attorney General Jason Meares announced Wednesday that prosecutors will investigate one of the state's richest school districts and its celebrated science and tech school for unlawful discrimination in violation of state law. No student should be treated differently because of their race. Students at Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology are amongst the brightest in the nation, yet some have been punished in the name of equity. Racism and racism race-based government decision-making in any form is wrong and lawful under Virginia's Human Rights Act. A federal judge ruled almost a year ago that Fairfax County school admission practices discriminate against Asian students by limiting their number in an effort to racially balance the student body at TJ, the top-rated STEM school in the country. Asian student enrollment at TJ declined from 73% to 54% before the judge ruled against the Fairfax school system last February, finding that the school's racial balancing practice is unlawful and discriminatory. And, you know, it figures it deals with Asians. They're putting percentages in there and fractions. I can't handle that shit. Regarding the discrimination against Asian students, Miera said, "The controversial admissions policies at TJ, which have significantly decreased the amount of Asian American students enrolled in recent years, is another example of students being treated differently because of their ethnicity. My Office of Civil Rights will investigate any potential violations of the law and vindicate the civil rights of these students and their families. I am grateful and hopeful that the Attorney General is looking into this matter," Harry Jackson, former president of the Thomas Jefferson High School Parents Teacher-Student Association, told the Daily Signal. "We, the parents, have been sounding the alarm on the dark side of equity." The dark side of equity. Pink Floyd's lesser-known follow-up album to Dark Side of the Moon.
Very good.
"As envisioned by..." We don't need no education, and we don't need no merit awards either. "As envisioned by..." "As envisioned by activist educators that can cause actual harm to our students," Jackson said. "We hope that Mieres will put an end to the current discrimination at TJ and allow our children to thrive. Although admitting to Jefferson's high direct implementation of the equitable policy, keeping students from being recognized for their achievements," written statement from the school attempts to paint the decision to withhold awards as a unique situation due to human error. Following a considerable controversy, Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin, a Republican, called for an official investigation into Fairfax County Public Schools and Thomas Jefferson High Schools regarding both discriminatory policies. And as we know, Miaris is taking that up, and this is Pip's blog, so we will give her first crack.
Obviously, this is insane, because here's a school that's one of the top schools, and they have decided that they are going to hold back the recognition of merit awards to the best students in a school that is supposed to be about achievement and being the best. It's so unfair that they have decided that they're not going to tell the students who have done the best, because they don't want to hurt the feelings of the ones who didn't. Are you insane? Are you crazy? What is this preparing students for in the real world? I mean, in the real world, you don't get participation trophies. You don't get 50% at work just for showing up. Well, I mean, maybe some people do. But I'm just saying that you have to work towards things. You have to show up. You have to do your best. You can't just sit there on your hands and say, well, you know what, it doesn't matter what I do because I'm going to get the same as everybody else. No, not here. That's not how it works. I think that it's outrageous that these two administrators took it upon themselves to decide that they're going to equal things out by not telling the best students. And also, it's their responsibility to tell the students, because obviously they're not going to find out any other way. It's an egregious dereliction of duty to have kept these awards themselves, and it really hurt the kids. 1,200 students were affected. It really hurt the kids that were already in school. They really, maybe they were teetering. Maybe their chosen school, it would have been helpful to have that achievement on their resume and to show, you know, that they could get, you know, scholarships, or they could get better placement. Whatever it is, this is something that they should have been told, they needed to be told, and I think these people should be punished.
Well, I'll tell you this. I think what they've done, I think you can make a case that these two should be fired. I think you can also make a case that there will be lawsuits, because you could certainly show financial harm on people missing out on scholarships, going, not being able to go to schools, which could, you know, have send them on a certain career trajectory. Now, I think most of these students are going to do pretty well as it is, but you could certainly have a cause of action here. There has to be repercussions.
Yeah. After what you both said, I don't really have much to add.
Now, here I'll say something that might be controversial here.
What's your incentive to study and work hard if you're going to get passed by? You know, and the thing about it is, we bring up the Asian, you know, the Asian. The in an honest society, they're usually, and it's not racist, it's the way it is. It's Asian people, it's Indian people, and it's Jewish people. And why? Because in that culture, in that thing, education is paramount. It is. It's everything. There's nothing wrong with that. And that's what's taught. I mean, and you know, I mean, in other households, maybe it's not, but in an Asian household, a Jewish household, an Indian household, education is paramount. People shouldn't be penalized, and they shouldn't balance out, well, you know, it's a lot of Asian people, or it's a lot of Indian people, or it's what? No, these people work very, very hard, and education is paramount in the home. Maybe your home wants to follow suit, but these people worked hard to do this. In the story, they were mentioning the kid is up, like, you know, in the middle of the night studying to pass this test. It's paramount, and they should be rewarded.
All right, now I'm going to say something that maybe we'll start a fight now, since we all agree that this is terrible. I mean, you know, if I was one of these parents, I'd be outraged. I think, and this is not the part that will start the fight, I think this is an example of liberals going too far. I think,
yes.
I think this was an example of good intentions, but when you don't have common sense involved, it goes too far and it harms people. This is an example of liberals going too far. I think conservatives go too far too sometimes. I think the difference though is when conservatives go too far, it's usually based on like spite or out of hurting somebody. Like a lot of the stories that we do where the conservatives go, when we all agree, go, what the hell are they doing? That's not common sense. Like we all do with this story.
They usually do it because of an agenda. You know, it's more of an agenda. This isn't really, well, this is kind of an agenda.
No, I think both have an agenda. But what I'm saying is I think the agendas, when the liberals do something, for the most part, it's coming from a place of good, and they take it too far to the place of stupid and harmful. I think when the conservatives go too far, it's usually coming from a place of bad, where they want to punish somebody or quote-unquote own somebody. I think that's the difference, and once again it points to, you need moderation. You need somebody in the room from the other side of the aisle going, wait a second. Let's see. Let's really throw this. How far this would go? What harm we do?
What you need on both ends of the spectrum is moderates starting to get more of control back.
Yeah.
On either side of the aisle.
Oh no, I agree with that. Yeah. All right. So maybe we're not going to start a fight. But I think that's the only difference. Where the bad policy starts, I think, come from two different places. But left unchecked, both have an ability to fuck things up.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Yeah. Horrible story. All right. Let's move on to this one. This is about the After School Satan Club. This is also in Virginia. So I'll read what's going on. Then Fox News did an interview with one of the parents that is against the After School Satan Club. And then I did an interview with a woman who's featured in this article, who helps charter these programs. And I did, and we'll play both. And then at the end of all that, we can discuss. As controversy roils in Virginia town over a planned Satanist after-school club, organizers and parents on both sides of the issue spoke to Fox News Digital to share their perspectives. The city of Chesapeake has recently drawn national attention as the center of a freedom sweeping the southeastern Virginia community after the Satanic Temple has attempted to establish an after-school Satan club, or ASSI, for kids at the local B.M. Williams Primary School. Regarding parents who are upset about the club, I would like them to know that we are here because we have worked with educators to develop an after-school program that is engaging and fun and helps young minds grow and thrive. June Everett, that's who I spoke to, an ordained minister of the Satanic Temple and campaign director of ASSC, told Fox News Digital. Maintaining the ASSC fosters creativity and projects that are often designed to benefit the community and promote empathy, Everett said. The Satanic Temple attempts to establish such clubs as a constructive and positive alternative to other religious after-school clubs that often glorify fear and indoctrination. That's her opinion. Everett said she was led to the Satanic Temple 5 years ago after her first grader was traumatized. She said she never said her son was traumatized. It's not in the interview, but when I play the whole when I release the whole interview, she never used the word traumatized. That was the New York Post. That was the New York Post creative writing. Is there as you know, whatever.
That never happens.
Yeah. By his classmates on the playground one day, and they were attendees of the Good News Club that was taking place at the public elementary school he was attending at the time. Her son was upset. He wasn't traumatized. I picked him up from school one afternoon, crying and upset after he was told that he would burn in hell away from his mommy and daddy and Molly, our dog at the time. If we didn't accept Jesus Christ into our hearts and start going to church, apparently Jesus got it out for dogs that aren't followers too. Everett continued.
Really?
The Lord doesn't have time for that stuff.
Well, you know what? Satan does have the hounds of hell. Maybe that's where Molly is.
Cerberus.
Yeah, sure.
You're right. I said that. You know what? It's funny. I was thinking of the name. Like, yeah, that's the name.
I knew there was a Good News Club there at the time, and this prompted me to start researching them more. And I realized that this is their goal, to use children who attend the club to proselytize to their peers. You know what? I like a first grader that's teaching me about our Lord Jesus Christ. That's what I have time for in my day. Everett, who earlier this week resubmitted an application to establish an ASCE in Chesapeake after the original sponsor withdrew, said the congregation at a local chapter of the Satanic Temple took her in with such open arms.
Usually it's club and hooves, but open arms
will work. Sure. I had never met such genuine, non-judgmental people in my life, she said. Satanism truly has made me a better person, a better friend, a better parent, and a much better contributing member of society. You know, that's a sentence you don't hear a lot. Everett said she believes that the evangelicals in particular emphasize fear and indoctrination in their approach, citing that the Child Evangelism Fellowship CEF stated mission for the Good News Clubs they sponsor is to evangelize boys and girls with the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ and to establish, disciple them in the Word of God in a local church for Christian living. Or we could all just play tag together. Those are the options. Maybe a little kickball. And if you lose, you're going straight to hell. kickball for your soul. But I'll tell you what, I'd pay a lot more attention if it was for my soul. Lydia,
if it was a fight for your eternal soul, I'd be a lot more athletic.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, no, nobody's dogging it if we're fighting. If it's a game for your soul, everybody's focused. Right. Everybody's going to kick their best, know the rules, throw the ball to hit the kid running. Everybody's on point. I don't have a problem with this.
Yeah, you're on guard when you're playing
kickball for your soul
for eternity.
Rawr. Lydia Kaiser, a spokesperson for the Missouri-based CEF, could not comment on the specifics of Everett's situation because she was not involved, but she described as typical the accusation that the Good News Clubs browbeat children into Christianity. Their curriculum materials for children, however, emphasize God's goodness and do not contain vivid descriptions of hell, she told Fox News Digital, where Motley Crue will be singing. We believe that there is a physical place called hell, and you're going to burn in it. We believe all that the Bible says about it, says Kaiser. But when we're talking to children, the way we describe it as separation from God. What, does God need a timeout? What's going on here? You don't need all of the scary the description. Can you imagine that that's how you would describe it to a first grader? God's giving you a timeout because you've done some things wrong. Think about how you didn't obey. Think about how you disappointed Jesus. You're in timeout for eternity. You don't need all that scary description, Kaiser continued. We don't want to scare children into making a decision. You kind of do. We want them to desire a relationship with God. What is God, on a Tinder date? Enough. That's our goal. I'm going to swipe right for God and swipe left to burn in hell. And so we recognize the goodness of God, how much God loves it. Yeah, but is he good if he's giving you a timeout and letting you burn in hell? I mean, that doesn't sound very nice. And how much?
It really is a severe penalty.
I tell you,
take it over, like Tony Soprano would do.
God sounds a little douchey at times, the way they describe him. How much God loves him and wants to what, Joe?
Well, he's usually not the life of the party sometimes when he gets pissed off with floods and locusts, you know, so...
It's all fun and game till the vermin falls from the sky.
That's right.
Who invited that guy?
What a party pooper. Listen to me. Obey me. Who died and made you cult leader? Oh, your son. Anyway.
Oh, wait. Yeah, your son.
how much God loves them and wants to forgive them for their sin and to be their friend, their savior, and their Lord. It's a lot. It's a lot. But you know what?
Yeah.
I kind of feel like I'm up to the task, too. We try to draw children into a relationship with God by describing him as good. And the bad we describe as separation from all that, she added. Kaiser, who noted that the parents are welcome to observe what goes on at after-school good news clubs, parried arguments that children are too young to reflect on spiritual issues by pointing out how children are expected by adults to learn other basics of human existence, such as healthy diet, personal hygiene, and stop eating the paste. Stop eating the paste. Pip, now you need to be separated. Stephen Mannix, who said he has served for about 15 years as the chairman of his local CEF chapter in the Virginia Tidewater region, said he plans to speak about the ASSE brouhaha next week's scheduled school board meeting in Chesapeake. They say they don't have any religious content, but it's bigger than that, Mannix told Fox News Digital of the Satan Clubs. ASSE claims not to teach of a personal devil, but rather serves as a place where young students can learn about benevolence and empathy, critical thinking, problem solving, creative expression, personal sovereignty, and compassion. Both Mannix and Kaiser believe that since the Satanic Temple started its ASSE campaign in 2016, it has been using the 2001 Supreme Court decision in Good News Club versus Milford Central School to stir up hysteria in various places that sponsor Good News Clubs until school boards feel compelled to shut them down after school clubs altogether. We can't have anything nice. The case ultimately rose to the Supreme Court after an upstate New York school district denied an application to a Good News Club on the basis that the kinds of activities proposed to be engaged in by the Good News Club were not a discussion of secular subjects such as child rearing, development of character, and development of morals from a religious perspective, but were in fact the equivalent of religious instruction. By the way, these are elementary schools. A little heavy for elementary schools.
Yeah, a lot.
The Supreme Court's opinion, which was written by former Associate Justice Antonin Scalia, ruled in favor of the Good News Club, noting that restrictions on speech in a limited public forum such as a public school must not discriminate on the basis of the speaker's viewpoint. The school district's attorney in this case argued that having a religious club on public school property even after school hours would violate the Establishment Clause of the U.S. Constitution by leading children to believe that the school or the government was somehow establishing a particular religion. The court shot that argument down, writing, "Finally, even if we were to inquire into the minds of school children in this case, we cannot say the danger that children would misperceive the endorsement of religion is any greater than the danger that they would perceive a hostility toward the religious viewpoint if the club were excluded from the public forum. The Satanic Temple does not believe in introducing religion into public schools and will only open a club if other religious groups are operating on campus, according to their website. We are only doing this because Good News Clubs have created a need for this." This is Lucian Greaves. He's the co-founder of the Satanic Club. If good news clubs would operate in churches rather than public schools, then we would disappear. Scram! The danger lies in... All right, I'm trying to see how much more of this I have to read for you guys to get the gist of this. So there are currently 4 clubs in the U.S. They say that they don't actually teach kids about Satan, Kaiser said, of the Satan clubs. They say it's more about humanism and so-called tolerance. So-called tolerance! Which is ironic when they're actually being intolerant, trying to get us kicked out. They're not really trying to get them kicked out, you know.
It sounds like they're trying to create a balance.
That's inaccurate. But they have an 8,000-pound – this is interesting. They have an 8,000-pound statue of Satan with 2 little elementary-age children looking at it adoringly, Kaiser continued. Well, I mean, it's got a goat's head. Children love to pet goats. If every time the story was run, they would show a picture of this mascot, people would be able to judge for themselves whether they're trying to appeal to children with Satanism. Okay. That's not really what they're –
Yeah, but still, I mean, you're saying that, you know, they're not trying. But meanwhile, they got a Dio album cover with 2 kids looking at it.
So what you're saying is you're
interested.
So what you're saying is you're interested in joining the club. Okay.
No, what I am saying is, you know, I see their point. They're good, but ixnay on the Satan A bank. If you want to try to get ahead with this,
yes.
All right. All right. So let's.
All right. Staying in schools now to this. The group calling itself the After School Satan Club is planning to hold meetings at a Virginia elementary school next week. A flyer invited kids to, quote, have fun and explain how the club does not attempt to convert children to any religious ideology. Instead, the Satanic Temple supports children to think for themselves. Aspen Nillette has one child enrolled in the school and is the founder of Chesapeake Parents for Freedom and joins me now. Aspen, is this for real? That was sort of my first reaction, and then I started to look into it, and it appears this is an actual thing.
This is a thing. I mean, it's hard to believe. It's hard to accept. It's happening right down the street, that it's in our community. It's an abomination against God. It's abhorrent. And I can tell you right now, the people of Chesapeake don't want this.
So what are you going to do about it?
Well, we're going to rally parents. We're going to expose this group. We're going to let people know what their intentions are, which is really to attack and target the Good News Clubs. They've been very clear about that. We're going to get parents to show up at school board meetings, city council meetings, and as churches and as a community of believers, we're going to pray.
It doesn't appear there's much you can do to stop it other than speaking out. Now, the Chesapeake Public Schools released a statement saying this, quote, "This is common practice among school districts around the state and nation. By law, CPS cannot discriminate based on beliefs among groups wishing to rent our facilities. Association is not a school district approved club, and no district employee is acting as a club sponsor."
Before I play the interview with June Everett, I don't know. If you're a news program and you're allegedly a journalist, do you really open with, is this a thing? You're the news, stupid. You're covering it as a news story. Shouldn't you know this is a thing? Is this really? I can't. Why does a half-assed comic give a better damn interview than these people on TV? Is this a thing? I wasn't sure. Then I did research. Then you know it's a thing.
It's like it's a ridiculous preamble to the story. It's like, well, if it's not a thing, then on to our next story.
If it's not a thing, more from Tucker. I mean, it's so stupid.
Exactly.
All right, that's all I want. That's all I want to say about that. I'm just blown away about what passes for news. So this is the interview I did with June Everett. She is the one who sets up these after school programs around the country, and she's also an ordained minister. So it's a longer interview, and then we can see how much I suck a dick when doing an interview. Where is that? Here we go. The after school programs that are talked about in the story are for high school kids, correct?
Oh, and that's where the post got it wrong, because I was confused. The Satanic Temple's After School Satan Club program and the Good News Club only go into elementary schools.
Okay.
And there's a reason for that. It's because the law says that in middle school and high school, what they consider secondary school,
mm-hmm.
they have to be student-led at that point.
As a parent, I find it more troubling that these type of activities, whether it be your activity or a Good News Club, are happening in elementary school when these kids are so impressionable. I'd rather have them be exposed to different things when they're a little older and they can make their own decisions.
Right, and I agree with you on that. And the reason we are there is to offer an alternative to the Good News Club so that people of other religions, other minority religions specifically, and people that know what the Good News Club is all about as far as evangelizing children and their peers that go to this club, we're there to offer like a positive, safe place where we're not threatening them with, threats of hell, and we don't actually teach about Satan, or we don't have them memorize the seven tenets, and we don't have them go out to their friends on the playground and have them talk to them about non-theistic Satanism. We don't do any of that, and we do believe strongly about our seven tenets as adults
mm-hmm.
That are self-identified Satanists, but we don't teach about it in our programs. Because, we feel that children should be able to pick and choose as they get older what religious beliefs they would like to follow or not follow. And there's a lot of pagans that come to our clubs, a lot of Wiccans, a lot of other agnostics and atheists and freethinker
mm-hmm.
Parents that sign their children up for these clubs. So there's a whole community of parents out there that want to send our their children to our clubs that aren't necessarily Satanists.
But couldn't you accomplish a lot of the same things that the club does do, which, again, I like, from what I understand, what I like with it,
sure.
If you, like, named it something like the Free Thinkers Club or something, instead of
sure.
affiliating it with Satan, which is scary to a lot of people.
It is, and we get that a lot, and, you know, my joke is always, I guess we could have named it the Better News Club.
There you go.
But the thing is, you know, it's a after-school program that is sponsored by the Satanic Temple. It is run by Satanists, and we are, you know, proud of who we are. So if we were to call it anything else, the Fluffy Bunnies Club, the Better News Club, you know, the Science Club, and people were to find out, oh, okay, this is a club that's sponsored by the Satanic Temple, and...
So did the Virginia chapter open up?
Did not. They pulled some shenanigans on us that are currently pending legal, and I can't speak too much of it, but mm-hmm. We definitely have our legal team involved. What they did was they approved our application.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have any issues. And then the superintendent decided to take it upon himself and send out an email basically warning the school district community that, you know, they had to approve our club. That, you know, the Supreme Court decided this back in 2001, and that the decision was really above their decision-making abilities. So they sent out this email, and of course it got everybody all in a tizzy, and the community, of course, reacted the way that the community is going to react when they don't know who we are, and they don't take half a minute to Google who we are. And so they decided to pretty much let the community threaten us with security. That's what they're kind of holding against us, is that there's too many security threats right now that they don't feel comfortable letting us do our club, where it's, you know.
So what happens if you counter to them, go, no, we're going to have security for the teachers and for the students. We're going to pay for security. It's our program. We're going to pay. I mean, obviously it's a burden on you guys, but what have you guys countered with something like that?
Tried, and they will not. They still, they're saying, nope, this is up to the school district. We have to have our own security assessments. We're going to have to, like, hire off-duty police officers. And no, you cannot proceed forward until, you know, we get this security issue resolved. And there's more to the story than that. They wouldn't let us send out our permission slips like they sent out the Good News Club permission slips. The principal of the school actually sent them out.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we were approved, we asked the school district to send our permission slips out, and it was a big, oh, no, you know, sorry, can't do that. We broke district policy before, but now we're going to enforce the rules. And we had a parent volunteer that was on the application that was all of a sudden very fearful that she was going to be publicly doxxed and, you know, possible harm to herself and her family. So she took her name off the application, and that's when the school district decided to cancel it without, you know, contacting me, who I'm the one with my signed name on the application. I'm the one that submitted the application. I'm the one that did all the paperwork. So they were just like, boom, canceled, done, like no discussion. And then they caused the scene by allowing all of these upset community members to come into the board meeting. And, you know, basically it was like open mic night for local pastors. And right now, they're still, like, not responding to any of our emails about moving forward, because we would like to have – we have 15 kids signed up for this club.
Okay.
So let me just say that. 15. We've received 15 permission slips. And we have parents that are eager to allow their children to attend. But as of right now, we're not sure if we're going to be able to launch the club on January 19th.
So your legal argument would be – and I take it you're ready to take this as high as you can – your legal argument would be that they are putting obstacles in place for your group to practice its religion in an unfair way compared to another religion.
Absolutely. They've instituted more hoops for us to jump through since they've decided to cancel our application, hoops that didn't exist previously. You'll have to Google, and your listeners will have to Google, what they call a heckler's veto. And it involves the First Amendment, and it basically says, you know, you can't tell someone that they don't have a First Amendment rights just because it's not a popular opinion.
Right.
Right. So just because the community is upset about it doesn't give any government organization the right to take away that ability just because, you know, we don't like Satan. That's not grounds for prohibiting us from that this access. So, yeah, we absolutely feel... Oh, and we did happen to do a FOIA request, and we did happen to see that the Good News Club is renting the facilities at no charge, and they were going to charge us $180. I wasn't sure if that was for the year or if it was per...
But still, it doesn't matter. You're getting charged something that they don't have to get charged. And the Good News Club does not have to provide security, correct?
Absolutely not, because, you know, people aren't upset about the Good News Club. But
well, that's irrelevant to whether they're when they're making policy or not. I mean, theoretically, you could show up with a bunch of Satanists or whoever, or non-Satanists, and make threats, and now all of a sudden there is a quote-unquote security risk.
And we talked about, you know, doing that. What if all of a sudden, you know, the bikers down the street, the big biker bar, you know, guys that support us, decide that they want to start showing up and yelling and screaming at, you know, parents during pickup and making a big scene? Like, all of a sudden, are you going to have to, you know, have them pay for off-duty law enforcement to be present and have this this extra hoop to jump through? So we definitely aren't giving up on this, and we do have our legal team that's working it, and hopefully we'll be able to resolve this peacefully. We've been trying to do that for a couple, you know, 3-4 weeks now, and it is just one continuous hoop after the other. And now, you know, because they're worried about what their community is going to do to us, right? It's not our people that are violent. It's not our people that are making threats, right? It's other, you know, people that believe, you know, Satan is an actual thing and it's so evil and we're going to go in and do these awful things. They're the ones that are threatening violence on us.
But you understand. I'm sure you understand why having Satan affiliated with is going to get people angry. Listen, I'm a Gen Xer. When I was growing up, a Motley Crue "Shout at the Devil" was a big problem. I mean, you bring the devil into it, people are going to get upset. You know this. You guys are you're a provocative group. You're a provocative name. You know this.
I understand. I've launched six after school Satan clubs. Mm-hmm. We've had protesters at every single club, peacefully protesting. That's the key word.
Yeah, that's
we've
fine.
Had a couple off duty, you know, maybe on duty police officers show up just to make sure that things don't get out of hand with the peaceful protesters. Because my people, we walk into the building, we don't stand around and yell and scream. We do not encourage counter protesting. We walk into the building, we do the club, we have a great time with the kids, and we leave. Like, that's our only business.
So how many kids are, you said you have 15 signed up for Chesapeake. How many kids on average are in these clubs?
Sure. So the Wilmington, Ohio club that I launched had about 8 kiddos.
Okay.
And then the Tehachapi, California club that I launched right after that had about 9 kids. So
okay.
I think as we're, you know, continuing to grow and get ourselves out there, that parents are less hesitant to send their kids.
Now, do these kids...
The first couple clubs I launched were like, you know, 3 or 4 children.
Okay.
So absolutely growing in size.
Do these kids like get, you know, we're talking about elementary school kids, and elementary school kids can be assholes. Do these kids get bullied by their peers because they're participating in your club, which is mainstream?
Your question. I haven't heard of any of the kids that attend after school Satan club getting bullied.
Good.
I mean, it would take their parents to obviously reach out to me and let me know.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't had any parents or guardians tell me that their children are busy. I don't know what it's going to look like down the road when we have 50 or 100 clubs. I'm sure there could be potential for bullying there. Kids will bully each other over the dumbest things.
Yes.
So I could see it being significant enough that there could be that, but you know, we'll just have to see.
I was just going to say, to be fair, I mean, you are clearly marketing this to children because the logo is not, I don't want to say it wrong, is it Fetamet? Am I saying that? I'm saying that wrong. But
our little you mean our professor guy for after school Satan club?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is not the statue with the head of a goat and two children next to it. It's a goofy, cartoonish, devilish type of character. It's complete. It's marketed for kids.
The after school club,
right?
I mean, yeah, we don't send the permission slips. Well, we haven't been able to get the permission slips out to any kids directly because the schools, you know, usually decide that we come along, and all of a sudden there's rules and policies about sending out permission slips from after school Satan club. But yeah, I mean, it's a cartoon character. We're not beating around the bush about, like I said, who we are or what we represent or what we do. And in the clubs, I know you asked, like, what's a typical club meeting look like? Well, having said that, you know, we don't teach about Satanism, we don't teach about the seven tenets, and we don't teach about, you know, our religion. We do have activities based around the seven tenets. So a lot of our clubs are doing project, community project type things, STEM projects, different art projects. Like, we've done the dog tie ropes for local animal shelters in one club. Okay. We did cards for the sick kiddos at the local children's hospital. There was lots of glitter involved. It was super fun. We've done the rocks, the kindness rocks for the kiddos. Something about rocks. Kids love painting rocks, where they paint the rocks and put little cute messages on them, and we deliver them throughout the community. And we have all sorts of fun stuff lined up for this year. But I really like my volunteers to kind of be able to pick and choose what activities they'd like to do.
So what happens?
As long as it doesn't, of course, involve sacrificing goats. And yeah, the kids have a great time.
Well, I mean, these sound like lovely activities, whatever the club would be. So what happens when you guys roll up, I don't know, to the sick kids? Or you know, senior citizens. I'm sure you guys do stuff for senior citizens, whatever it is. And there's this thing, but it's sponsored by the Satan Club. Do the people who are receiving this, like, do they get taken aback? Or are you guys embraced? What's that reaction like?
You know, part of what comes with the territory, with our growth, you know, considering that we've really only been around 10 years, which is just a tiny, tiny, tiny blip on the radar.
Right.
As more and more people become familiar with us, as we do continue to, our different congregations across the world continue to do good works in their communities and let their presence be known that we are, you know, trying to bring positivity to the communities that we live in, it's becoming less and less weird. You know, I'm part of the congregation here in Colorado, and we do a couple drives for, like, the veterans and for some of the shelters here in town. And at first it was like, ooh, who are you? And now they absolutely love us. They're like, they prefer us over any of the other organizations because there's no strings attached, right? Like, here's all your stuff. Have a great day, you know? So as we continue to grow more and more, you know, people don't leave, you know, and I hope that in 10 or 20 years from now, they're not even going to flinch when we show up with cards for the sick kids or, you know, the dog tie ropes. I know a lot of the animal shelters love working with us. We just did a back to school night where we raised $600,
mm-hmm.
Which doesn't sound like a lot of money, but we raised $600, and the local SPCA animal shelter took all the donations from that, and they were like, you know, we don't care where it's coming from. As far as, like, you know, we get compared to hate organizations that are on, like, the hate watch list. We're not that. Like, we are not on. We are not known for violence. We are not known for threatening people. We are not known for, you know, going after people with hate. That's not who we are. So once we establish that, they're all about us.
And that was June Everett from the After School Satan Club. So you can see the other side of the argument. Well, I think she's a good representative of her organization.
That was a hell of an interview.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate that. I did.
Yeah, that was really good.
Thank you. That's about
hell,
half.
Don't you get it? Hell of an interview.
Oh, I thought you were being nice, but you weren't.
We should have rethought that.
Yeah, Joe. I thought you actually liked the interview, but you know, whatever.
I can barely hear it.
You can hear it here. You can hear it. You can hear it on the podcast. I mean, the audio quality is good. It's not meant for this fakakta thing, you know. So, but it's the only way to do it. But that's neither here nor there. So I put the poll up. Should these clubs be allowed to open in schools? And it was actually split, you know, 50-50. Half the people think they shouldn't be. Half the people think they should be. Listen, I think they should be. I don't, but I told her, I go, I don't like any of these clubs. I don't think any of them should be allowed on school property, but they're renting out the property. It's not quote unquote affiliated with the school, and the Supreme Court ruled what the Supreme Court did. So their position is this is if you take the logic to its likely conclusion, this is what you get. And she's not wrong.
She's not wrong.
No, she's not wrong. It has a constitutional right if the other schools are in there. I just say is like, you know, call it something else, because, you know, it has a negative connotation. It has, for, yeah, you know, but, thousands and thousands of years.
But she addressed that.
Good.
She addressed that, you know, I'll repeat what she said. Basically, then people would find out that they were affiliated with Satanism, and it would be much worse. This way they're upfront with it, because I said the same thing. Why not call yourselves the Free Thinkers Club, or whatever you want to call yourself? But I see her point. Let's just be upfront with it, and let the chips fall where they may. Gotta be honest, I mean, I really wouldn't be thrilled if my kid wanted to join the after-school Satan Club, just because the name of it.
But that's what I'm saying. I think they have a more positive message than the religion, you know, the normal church does, you know. But still, it's that the old, you know, that stigma. It's like,
yeah,
you know,
but imagine the outrage if they didn't call, if they called themselves whatever. I think she said the Fluffy Bunnies Club, whatever. And then somebody does a little digging. Wait a second, this is sponsored by the church, by the Satanic Temple.
Going on here,
right? So you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Huddle a huddle a hoo.
It sounds like if they're hanging out with Satan, they're damned either way.
Yes, Pip, that's what I was going for. Thank you for explaining the joke.
sorry. No, I think that the name of it is needlessly antagonistic.
What would you have them say? Little Devil's Club? I mean, what would you have them say?
No, maybe the Humanist Club or something.
Right, but that's not. But they are not. They are affiliated with this religion. They are doing projects and with an affiliation with the Seven Tenets. Even though if they're not saying these are the Seven Tenets of Satan, these are their themes. I mean, this is their religion.
Tenets,
not tenets.
The Seven Tenets, if you read them, are secular and they have nothing to do with Satan, like. In the sense that people look at Satan as being evil, a proponent of evil or sin, it's actually. Can I read the Seven Tenets?
I mean, you can, but we didn't go over the Seven Tenets per se. But we did discuss a lot of this in the full length interview. But I'm not going to play a 30 minute interview.
Anybody's listening, just Google the Seven Tenets of Satanism, unless you don't want that on your Google search. But it's really very benign, and it's very humanistic. And just saying, be good, work towards justice, don't do harm. If you do, try your best to fix it. You know, just be a good person is basically, and believe in science, and don't try to bend science to your preconceived notions, except what it is. It's very humanistic, and it's more in line with the founders of the country than the Christianity that's being espoused Good News groups.
What I don't understand is that then why is Satanism getting a bad rap? Because basically, if these tenets teach you that it's all good, how come we, at least in the Catholic Church, when you have the your I forgot what you call it, but you renew your faith in the church, one of the things is in that is you reject Satan and all his works.
Well, John, because these churches, like most religions, are designed to keep the rabble, like yourself, in line. And the way we keep them in line is by scaring the shit out of them. You got to remember, when these religions were written many years ago, we didn't have Google. And, actually, you know what? We haven't gotten any better. You know, we still believe whatever anybody says. Just ask Marjorie Taylor Greene, who blames the internet for her believing QAnon. So we've gotten no better. The devil was designed, because these books are written by human beings, the devil was designed to scare you straight. That's what it is. And that's what most of us grew up with. Whether we went to Catholic school or wherever, it's in the ether. We've seen the movies. We've seen the TV, we've seen the cartoon characters, we've seen the little angel on one side and the devil on the other side, and that's where we stop. Most of us aren't taking the next step, which, again, June talked about. But and like I said, I had the same point of view that you have, Pip, but they are a religion. Just to make it more easy for us to digest and others to digest, they're not interested in doing that, and that's fine. It's not like the Catholic Church is trying to do much to make everybody make it more appealing to everybody. I mean, sure, now they're cutting back on the diddling of kids, but for hundreds of years, kid diddling was fine. I mean, what are you going to do?
Like I said, with at least with the Catholic Church, and I've mentioned it on the show before, I had an interest in religion when I was a kid. And I was trying to get into Catholic instruction, and the church, oh, he's too old. I wasn't old. I was 8. oh, he's too old. And it took a neighbor across the street that worked at the rectory to talk to the pastor to get me in. It's not like I'm trying to do a spot at the club. I'm trying to, you know, learn about religion. You should be accepting. So a lot of the teachers of the church aren't that accepting. I mean, if the Church of Satan and their tenets are more accepting, that's fine if they're teaching good. You know, it's just the whole stigma around.
Listen,
and they do have the constitutional right.
I said this to her. I don't know if it was in the clip that I played. I said, because she's like, people need to look it up. I go, do you know us? Have you met us? Like that's listen, they're going on the logic that, if you want to learn about something, you will look it up. Most of us don't do that, whether we don't have the time, whether we're too lazy, we're too stupid, we don't have enough interest, whatever it is. Most of us aren't doing it. And honestly, they don't really care. And that's okay. Most religions don't care what other people think. That's fine. They're entitled to do that. I got to tell you, when we start this divinity thing, and it won't be a cult, it'll be a religion soon enough. When we start this divinity thing, we're not worried about what the rest of the plebs think. We know we got the right answers.
thing is, I know that the Supreme Court has overruled me, but I think that with the separation of church and state, there shouldn't be any religions on school campuses.
I agree with you.
It should not be part of the student life at all. If you want to learn about religion, you go to the educational part of the service at your own church or temple or whatever you do. But
yeah.
What does it have to do with our schooling? It
well,
should not be there at all.
Well, but,
you know,
but
what it is? It's like basically if the rally around that, well, if one goes in, they all go in. You know, and they should say nobody goes in. But, you know, like I said, they have a reason. You know, the Feel Good Club or whatever it's called is in there, and then this woman feels that, the Satan Church should be in there as well, which seems like a more inclusive club.
Their argument is that they are fighting for all of our rights. Their argument is that if you exclude one religion, you could exclude every religion, and they're fight. That's their argument, and I'm sympathetic to it. Like would I want my kid to join the after school Satan club? My initial response would be, fuck no. But after you get past that, if you did the research, you go, oh, that's not so bad. They could be doing worse. The problem with this is it's in elementary schools, and I asked about that. This is all elementary schools? Yes, because in the middle schools and high schools, the organizations are led by students. So in the elementary school, it's led by adults. And I think that's where this crap is the most dangerous. I mean, when we're, whether it be the Good News Club or the after-school Satan Club or Jewish club or whatever it is, to have that with the young minds that are so impressionable, it's too much. But they didn't ask me.
Yeah.
Antonin Scalia made the rules. So listen, he's a idol of the conservative way of thinking and of the Supreme Court, of a respected conservative mind. He wrote the opinion. There we are. But you got to deal with what you wrote.
Yeah,
I guess he didn't really think through, this is opening us up to a whole other kettle of worms.
I don't think they look at things like that.
Here we are.
I don't think they look at things like that. If you look at the way they handle this abortion thing, I think they're very, a lot of times, they're very tunnel vision. These are the facts. This is the case. This is the issue. This is how we're ruling for this set of facts, for this case and this issue. And then everybody else, tries to make it go here and there and everywhere. And then, and I don't think the court cares about that. More work for the court. Keeps them in a job.
Yeah.
Well, it's also, then if, end result of one of their decisions is something that nobody foresaw and is something that people think is detrimental, well, then that goes back up the courts and then they can tweak it. But I know they can't be all seeing and people, try to extrapolate every idea that comes through the court. Well, what if that means that? Well, we'll deal with that when it comes, won't we? And I guess this is another one of those things. Now we're dealing with it. And I don't think that most people are going to bother to be looking into what this group is really about, what the Satanic Church is really about. But, if they read their seven tenets, they might not agree with them because they're not exactly lined up with the, beliefs of Christianity, because Christianity is more about indoctrinating people and keeping them in their place rather than leaving them open to think for themselves. But, and that's more what seems to be in line with the Church of Satan from my understanding of it. But you know what? It's to me, it's that, you know, they're bringing up Satan, which is a big red letter flashing light to Christians, and they're not going to bother looking into what they really are about. They're just saying, Satan! Well,
and it goes back to what I was saying before, but then David's counterpoint, well, they really want to be upfront with it, so, you know, just in case they did. Yeah, but still, it's a, you know, it's a uphill battle. I mean, you wrote what you're wrong, you know, it's an uphill battle.
They are ready to, in their mind, they're defending all of us, and they're ready to take it up up the court. I got no problem with it. Like I said, I agree with you. Not what I would name it, but they didn't ask me to do PR, and I take their point. And it's their organization. They could do what they want. I don't have a problem with it.
You know, and if other religions, well, do they deserve to be there? Well, if the other religions are there, yeah, they do actually. And you got a rule. You know, going back to the Supreme Court judges, they have tunnel vision. They have tunnel vision. Is, well, this is what they define the Constitution saying, and any outside source of that is to be negated because we're ruling on based on the Constitution. So, you know, there you go.
All right. So, all right. I thought June did a nice job. I'll put up the whole interview probably on Thursday, and I'll give myself credit for not opening with the interview with, is this for real? Ugh.
That was a really good interview. She acquitted herself well, and you know, you ask good questions.
Thank you. All right, let's do the five biggest cybersecurity risks for the year. We'll do some scam busters. All right, here we go. Cybersecurity experts have warned that 2023 could usher in a new era of concerns over cyber attacks, which are expected to rise sharply this year as new threats emerge faster than ever. Myriad forces are causing the uptick in cyber attacks. John Wilson, a senior fellow responsible for threat research at Agari by Fortra and the head of the Agari Cyber Intelligence Division, wrote in Forbes last month, "The Russia-Ukraine war and rising poverty and food insecurity around the world are major contributors." Now, bad people are going to do bad shit no matter what. Wilson's warning comes as 2023 looks poised to become a record-breaking year for cyber attacks. According to analysis by cybersecurity venture, the global annual cost of cybercrime could top $8 trillion in 2023, or what it costs to fund one presidential campaign. That number could even underestimate the problem, according to numbers from Security Intelligence, who estimate that U.S.-based financial institutions alone lost close to $1.2 billion in ransomware attacks, or what Steve Cohen's payroll for the Mets will be this coming year. An almost 200% increase over the previous year. If that rate increases at the same pace, global losses from cybercrime could be as high as $16 trillion. However, financial institutions are not the only target for cyber criminals, who have used new technologies and exploited weaknesses in systems to target everyone from small businesses to individual people. With those crimes expected to explode in 2023, here are five cyber crimes to look out for. QR codes have become a common sight for users of smartphones in recent years, being used to quickly transmit data such as shipping information or a restaurant's menu. However,
Because basically, you know, they're all over the place, and yeah, you know, they're a lot more prevalent now. So that's a very interesting fact there.
However, experts are warning that malicious QR codes are on the rise, potentially exposing people to dangerous websites that could download their personal data or enable hackers to track their every move via apps that are geolocation-enabled. Cybercriminals tamper with both digital and physical QR codes to replace legitimate codes with malicious codes. According to the FBI, the malicious codes could prompt users to a fake website or application, input login or financial information that would allow the attacker to easily steal money. Malicious QR codes may also contain embedded malware, allowing criminals to gain access to the victim's mobile device and steal the victim's location as well as personal and financial information and dick pics. The cyber criminal can leverage the stolen financial information to withdraw funds from victims' accounts. To avoid falling victim, the FBI advises smartphone users to never download an application when prompted to do so after scanning a QR code. The agency also suggests staying vigilant on what links QR code scans prompt you to open and never to use third-party applications to scan code, sticking instead to the built-in QR code scanning function in your smartphone. Ransomware attacks, which threaten to compromise users' personal data or block access until a ransom is paid, are almost as old as the internet. However, experts are warning that old tactics is expected to become a bigger threat, with cyber criminals adapting tools that have dependent on to help keep them that people have depended on to help keep them safe. So it's getting worse. They're estimating that global ransomware damages will exceed $30 billion this coming year. Cyber Reason report this year found that 73% of organizations were the target of at least one ransomware attack in 2022. Increasing complexity in IT continues to lead to breaches and compromises, highlighting the need for more holistic approaches in cyber protection. The current cybersecurity threat landscape requires multi-layered solution that combines anti-malware, EDR, DLP, email security, vulnerability assessment, patch manager, RMM, MICKEY, and backup capabilities all in one place.
I was thinking, I'm getting like a little bamboozled by all of those acronyms. I'm like, I don't know what half of that means.
Yeah, I didn't look it up either, but I figured it's smart stuff.
Yeah.
Global supply chains that were severely hindered during COVID-19, they're going to be a target. According to analysis by BlackBerry, who knew they were still around, 4 out of 5 organizations faced threats to their software supply chain over the past year. The results of those vulnerabilities inflicted enormous costs, BlackBerry said, with 58% of those organizations facing operational disruptions, data loss, 55% experiencing intellectual property loss, 49% suffering financial loss.
By the way, BlackBerry was going to write a lot more, but they lost the stylus.
The problem is not going away anytime soon. BlackBerry Vice President, unlike the product, the BlackBerry product, Vice President for Product Security, Christine Gadsby said, who warned organizations to be more diligent. All right. We've talked about this before. They're going to go after electric vehicles, and more vehicles are electric vehicles. So then there's more of them on the road. They're being connected and automated more than ever, and there's a higher risk of cybersecurity attacks. They don't need to be inherently more at risk than a modern ICE vehicle. It's just that EV vehicles, to maximize its performance, will naturally be using the most modern electrical architecture, including all manner of connectivity, which by its nature can create a greater level of risk. The grid, we've seen this before, the electric grid that's happened. We've already seen that the past few months. I think in North Carolina there was a cyber attack. I think some other places too. The Pentagon's Defense Advanced Research Project Agency has been preparing for such a possibility since 2015, investing $118 million in a project called Rapid Attack Detection, Isolation, and Characterization System, or RADx. The program ran through 2020. 2020 offered 15 utility companies the opportunity to test for vulnerabilities, drill for an event of an attack, and realistic scenarios, which experts called an eye-opening experience. However, other experts argue the U.S. still has not done enough to prevent what could turn into a devastating attack. All right. So that's a cheery outlook. I've used QR codes a couple times. I don't like them. I find them confusing. I don't want to deal with them. I'm old. I'm old and it's scary out. What?
I don't like them either. You know, you got to hold the thing up and then hope they take a picture of it. It's bullshit.
And now dangerous. The worst is like when you're at a restaurant and like, oh, because of COVID, we got rid of menus. Well, bring them the fuck back. Bring them back. I don't want to use my QR.
Yeah, let me guess what the chef has in mind. For a fucking restaurant, I want a menu.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what a pain in the neck. You know, at my day program for the Christmas party, they decided that they were going to put up flyers about the party around the workplace. And then if you wanted to, like, RSVP, you had to use the QR code on the flyer. No. I waited until they came and asked me.
They did the same thing. So I didn't use the QR code. I just responded back to the person.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that. But you know,
we
set that all up, our IT department. So of course they're going to do shit like that.
Of course.
IT department. Yeah.
I don't think, even though electric cars are more vulnerable, I don't think it's going to slow the growth of electric cars because I think people like them. But it is a concern.
Yeah, they do, but that is, yeah, that is worrisome. It's that
gonna,
somebody else could take over your car.
It's going to suck when you want to go to the market, but your car's not running proper, and you have to hit, like, Control-Alt-Delete to reboot it. But it is what it is.
That's coming.
The interesting thing is, it may. What type of outage do we need for this country to, like, take the to allocate the resources that are necessary to update the grid? I mean, it's crazy.
Really? No, it is crazy. Why do we, in so many instances, not just with the grid and infrastructure problems galore, but why do we always wait until it's on fire before we consider, oh, maybe we should think about doing something about this? And then as soon as that particular fire is out, nothing further is done.
What was it, like 15, 20 years ago, there was a grid failure and New York went dark. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
And we're still not fixing our infrastructure. We do stupid things like we set up the TSA, which effectively really does nothing because they hire the least competent people with the Hitler complex to, like, terrorize people as they come and go from airports, and they're not actually stopping anything.
I don't know if that's exactly true. I think they are.
My opinion.
Well, yeah, that's your opinion. I think they're doing something. All right, here's predictions from 100 years ago. 100 years ago, scientists and sociologists looked into their crystal balls to the year 2023 and made a host of predictions. So here are some of the predictions, which were shared on Twitter by a Canadian professor, declared that by this year, cancer would be eliminated, women would dye their teeth black, there would be a four-hour workday, and that everyone would be so good-looking. Beauty contests will be unnecessary. To which I would say, were beauty contests ever necessary?
Yeah. No. No, they were not.
We need to find out who are the hideous and who are the attractive amongst us. Get up there and put on your bathing suit. Let us judge so that we all may have a standard of beauty and carry on with our day.
Wow. You know, yeah, I know. It's like, let's get that schadenfreude we really enjoy by throwing up the people that we think are hideous. And then we'll say, well, at least I don't look like that.
Yeah, sure. That's what I'm banking on.
Yeah.
They did predict the use of cell phones, drone warfare, and the conquering of diseases such as polio and leprosy, according to the now viral Twitter thread by Paul Ferry. And he had no idea 100 years from now what his name would be sounding like, a fairy. I don't know about that. One newspaper claimed that by 2023, the average lifespan would reach 100 years of age, while even that was far off the 76-year lifespan Americans averaged last year. Some prognosticators in 1923 thought that people might live to 200 or 300 years. God damn.
Well, that was Willie Nelson and Keith Richards that we were betting on.
Several writers, meanwhile, foresaw a future of beautiful, healthy people. I can't wait till I meet them. One article was partially correct, as it predicted the medical science would end cancer as well as tuberculosis, infantile paralysis or polio, and leprosy. Another publication reasoned that the curing of disease would mean fewer doctors, and also boldly predicted all people beautiful in 2023. I talked about that. Only time will tell if the style trends predicted will come true. One anthropologist basing their prediction on masculine and feminine styles boldly claimed curls for men by 2023 would be the hottest fad. Not crazy. You know, I got to tell you, the Hasidics have been trendsetters for years.
There you go.
Another article published by the Savannah News forecast that women will be blackening their teeth in 2023 and also shaving their heads. What?
Why?
I don't know. Why do people put metal on their teeth? I'm not talking about braces, but like they put like gold on their teeth because it's something to do.
Well, I'll tell you something. I don't know if it's a trend, but something that we're seeing people do is tattooing their eyeballs.
Nobody predicted that, but
it's a real thing. How crazy is that?
I can't even put an eye drop in my eye.
I know. I have trouble with contacts. I can't imagine. But people do it, but a lot of them go blind.
Yeah, well. Forecasters stopped short of predicting there'd be flying cars. They did make forecasts about technology that often hit the mark. One writer correctly foresaw watch-sized radio telephones will keep everybody in communication with the ends of the earth. Archibald Lowe, who developed the first drone, looked into his crystal ball and accurately foresaw that the war of 2023 will naturally be a wireless war between Verizon and Sprint due to wireless telephony, sight, heat, power, and writing. Meanwhile, one paper foresaw the growth of aviation in the future, predicting that in 2023 it would take 18 hours to fly from Chicago to Hamburg, Germany. They were actually not bold enough in their forecast, as it now takes 9.5. One newspaper began newspapers would come to an end, the death of the newspaper.
Yes.
In reading a forecast of 2023, many varieties of aircraft are flying through the heavens. We do not begin the day by reading the world's news, but by listening to it, for the newspapers has gone out of business more than half a century before. Takeaway. All right. I can actually see the black teeth thing becoming popular.
You know, you don't know, because people will do really odd things for quote-unquote fashion.
Yeah, I could see it happen. Yeah, you show off the jizz. It's nice. So I made a couple predictions. If you guys want to weigh in or have your own, that's fine too. I think more people will live past 100, but most people will die before 20. Economics will be the greatest predictor of lifespans.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think travel under the sea will be a thing.
Oh, I like that. Interesting.
I think parts of the world will have to stay inside. Regions of the world will have to stay inside.
Yeah.
The Jets still will not have won a Super Bowl.
Okay.
And society will have created another major religion to explain what current religions can't explain.
Mm. So. Perhaps.
That's my predictions. You guys have anything to add?
No.
I do think that we're going to not see flying cars. I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's practical.
You'll see flying cars. What you're going to see is drone technology. And the drone technology will everything will be on computer programs, and the drone technology will be there where it's not going to be – people can't drive. They're going to fly. However, automation will on computer will be running everything. You'll set a destination. It'll automatically take off for that destination plan. And also, if there's any weather variables or anything, that will be taken and accounted for.
It'll figure out everybody else's flight plan and keep them from crashing, you think?
Yeah.
I think that would be another opportunity for hackers to get in there and create catastrophe. Can you imagine just cars dropping from the sky willy nilly?
You never know. But when I was in college 30 years ago, I told a story. I'll tell it again. I was in a marketing class. We had to market a product. My idea was to market something that you talk into and it types. Okay, I was told that was far fetched. Okay, and that was 1987, 88.
Jeez.
And look at it now. You know, so, you know, mm-hmm. Things that seem far-fetched 30 years in the future. And we're talking about 100 years now. That even 30 years is commonplace.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Well, that was about things that might be coming. This is about things that should be no more. The Lake Superior State University annual list of banned words. We will go through them, discuss them, and give them our own special send-off. GOAT, the acronym for the greatest of all time, gets the GOAT of petitioners and judges for overuse, misuse, and uselessness. Applied to everyone and everything from athletes to chicken wings, an objective declared, how can anyone or anything be the GOAT anyway? Records fall, time continues, sport, some sprinkle GOAT like table salt on anyone who's really good. In other words, Smith, ironically, GOAT once suggested something unsuccessful. Now GOAT is an indiscriminate flaunt. I could get rid of GOAT.
I could go without it. I didn't even know that it was a thing until, like, quite a while into everybody else seeming to know.
Yeah, it's a big
I always thought it was, like, if you were – because basically during the sportscast, like at the end of the – like on a Sunday or whatever, he would pick out the worst sport – you know, the biggest flub of the sports flub, and that guy would be the GOAT. So when this term really picked up, it's like, really? Why does this guy suck? You know, really, until I found out it was greatest of all time. So basically, I could see GOAT going. I wouldn't miss it at all.
Yeah.
Inflection point. mathematical term that entered everyday parlance, lost its original meaning. This year's version of pivot banished in 2021. Chronic throat clearing from historians, journalists, scientists, or politicians. Its ubiquity has driven me to an inflection point of throwing soft objects wherever I hear. A quipster recounted inflection. All right. So I don't hear it a lot, so I don't care one way or the other.
Yeah, I don't hear it at all. I don't hear it that much at all.
I've never heard it. At least I wasn't aware that, like, it didn't jump out at me if somebody used it. I was like, "What? What's this?"
They use it on political shows. That's where they
really?
Use it. Yeah.
Oh, perhaps that's it. I really don't remember hearing this. And if I did, I didn't know what they were talking about.
Quiet quitting. Not an employee who inconspicuously resigns. Instead, an employee who completes the minimum requirement for position. All right, so basically, you're doing the bare minimum. As it says, to stick around. It's quiet quitting. You're a slacker, but not really a slacker. Yeah, I could get rid of it. It's a stupid phrase.
Yeah.
Ugh, I hate it.
All right. Gaslighting. Pip likes this one. Pip uses this sometimes.
Yes.
Nominators are not crazy by arguing that overuse disconnects the term from real concern is identified in the past. Dangerous psychological manipulation that causes victims to distrust their thoughts, feelings, memories, or perception of reality. Other cited misuse and incorrect catch-all to refer generally to conflict or disagreement. It's too obscure of a reference to begin with, avowed sundry critics alluding to the 1938 play and 1940-44 movies. Yeah, I could get rid of it. I don't like it.
You know, it's funny. I don't like the word either. However, Gavin, you know that joke I was doing about Camp Lejeune?
Yeah,
that Camp Lejeune joke. I'm at the mic one night. I'm working on the joke, and I go, I can't believe it. They're gaslighting me. You know. So one of the other guys goes up and like my comics, you all bust their balls. He's got a gravelly voice. He's like, I don't know. Joe Curry, a guy that age shouldn't be using the term gaslighting. He doesn't know what that means. But I left my ass off. He's like, why? That word is too young for you to use.
Joe's like, what are you talking about? I have a kerosene lamp. What's the problem?
Yeah.
But the funny thing is, I go, I would tell you, fuck you, but I actually had to look the word up to see what it meant and then put it in the joke, so you're not that far off.
That's funny. No, that's not a new word. That's been around for a while. It just picked up usefulness, I suppose, in the everyday parlance.
I got to tell you, I've heard that word a zillion times until I wrote that bit. You know, I looked it up to find it. And I'm not talking like, I mean about twice, 2 months ago, you know?
Ah!
It really came to prominence under the Trump administration. People pundits or whatever would say he was gaslighting them. That's
mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not a big fan of it. I could do without it. Pip likes it, right?
I like it because I think it's a useful summation of that type of manipulation.
Moving forward, misuse, overuse, and uselessness, where else would we go? Wonder to sage, since we can't, in fact, travel backward in time, may also refer to get my way, or as in how can we move forward? Well, guess what? Sometimes you can't, another wit stated. Not moving forward's useful.
I use the word all the time. I mean, the day program, this show, whatever. It's like, all right, look, we did this. Moving forward, why don't we do this and this? And, you know, so yeah, I mean, that's in my in my words.
Yeah, no, it's useful to say, especially when you're in a conversation where people are bogged down by the past, and you're just like, okay, that's done. You're trying to portray that's done. Let's go forward.
Amazing. Not everything is amazing, and when you think about it, very little is, a dissenter explained. This glorious word should be reserved for that what is truly dazzling, moving, and awe-inspiring. You know what? I agree with that. You know who uses this all the time? Chef Ramsay. You know what? They'll be like ketchup on a hot dog. Oh, it's an amazing, amazing hot dog. Is it? Is it really, Chef? No, it's overused enough. The only time it should be used is if we're talking about one of the ballads off the Get a Grip album by Aerosmith.
Yeah, I think that amazing is, you know, there are certain words that people use as superlatives, and, you know, then everybody jumps on the bandwagon with that word for a while. I think that it, you know, at one point it was awesome. Everything was awesome. And, and it's like, not everything literally inspires awe. So that's overused. you know? It's like, oh, wow. No. So it's,
not everything, I hate to break it to you, not everything inspires awe.
You know, and I don't stand back and like hold my heart and have to think for a moment when I see it. No. And the same thing with amazing. I am not literally amazed by this. It's just sort of, you know, it's this year's superlative that we're done with.
Well, oh, this tastes amazing. How is it going to change your life? Is it?
Yeah, exactly.
Does that make sense? Submitters rejected the desire, perhaps demand for clarification or affirmation as filler, insecurity, and passive aggression. Why say it if you must ask? It just doesn't make sense. Tis one. And this call for reassurance of act false modesty inquires warp respondents into co-conspirators deduced another. Now, I like, does that make sense? Sometimes you don't know if it makes sense.
Because you're prefacing something. If you go, he did this, you want to do that. It's you know, and now they're telling me this. And I see that guy doing that. Does that make sense? So that it prefaces a situation that you're analyzing, and you're bringing somebody else in the conversation to analyze it. So she maybe it's you, you know. So if you do that, say, you know, blah 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 blah. You know, does that make sense? You know.
Yeah. I agree. I think that's really useful.
Irregardless. It makes my hair hurt, as well as it should, because it's not a word. At most, it's a non-standard word per some dictionaries. Regardless suffices. Opponents disqualified it as a double negative. One conveyed that the prefix ear plus regardless equals redundancy. All right. Yeah, I mean, I've used it. I get it. It's not a word. But somebody put it in there. But we can get rid of it. It's fine. We have another word that works. Just
you know, because sometimes you do use it by accident. Did I just say irregardless? All right. Yeah, it's regardless. You know, so you correct yourself and you kind of make a point not to use it because it's not a word, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Doing a bit or something like that, you know, in Italian, but you know, not irregardless, you know. I mean, you know, a bit, but you know, in regular spoken word, no, we could get rid of that.
Now, I've been trying to think that there's another word that's similar to that, that it doesn't make any darn sense, but irregardless is not one of my favorites.
Well, here, I got another phrase for you, not for nothing. Same thing.
Oh, yeah, what the hell does that mean?
So for something. What are you talking about?
For something, you know.
That's a New York thing. You know,
it is a New York thing.
You know, it's like, you know, look, not for nothing. You know, yeah. That's, I mean, you won't hear that down south, but you won't hear that in the Midwest.
I don't think so. Yeah, I know.
Absolutely. Banished in 1996, but deserves a repeat nope given its overuse. Usurped the simply yes, laments a contributor. Another condemned it as the current default to express agreement, endemically present in TV on one-on-one interviews. Frequently said too loudly by annoying people who think they're better than you. They're coming at you. They're coming for you, Sergeant Padula. Sounds like it comes with a guarantee when that may not be the case. I don't have a problem with absolutely. It means 100%.
Yeah. Oh, I immediately thought of Joe Padula and thought, oh, this has got to be like a skewer to his heart.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, I like the word. I like it a lot. I'm still using it.
All right, the final one. It is what it is. Banished in 2008 for overuse, misuse, and uselessness. Pointless cop-out. Only Yogi Berra should be allowed to utter such a circumlocution. Its resurgence prompted these insights. Well, duh, no kidding. Of course it is what it is. Yeah, I use it, but yeah, we could get rid of it. It's fine.
No, nope. It's got to stay. I use that all day long.
Yeah, but you sound stupid. That's the problem. We use it, but we sound stupid. So
No, because basically you're calling out a situation. To give you an example, I was at the day program today. I was talking about one of the lines that I handle, and I was talking to one of my coworkers, and I'm like, yeah, they shipped it wrong. We worked like hell to get the order. They shipped half the shit wrong. I go, and I can't even get mad because talking to them is like telling a frat house to get their shit together. You can say it all they want. You don't give a fuck. I go, it is what it is, and I'm not going to get pissed.
Yeah, but you've accomplished nothing with adding it is what it is. That's the argument for it. I use it too.
It is what it is because you can't, you know, it's like there's nothing you can do. You got to deal with it.
All right, Pip, what do you think?
I don't think it's the smartest phrase that we all use, but I think it does have a point. Sometimes we need to have a phrase that it definitively ends the conversation. And it's also just saying, this is the place we're in. What are you going to do? That's it's another New York. What are you going to do?
It is what it is.
What am I going
to do?
What am I going to do? I'm going to stop wasting your time with nonsensical statements. That's what I'm going to do. All right.
Oh, no. We'll come up with more. We'll use plenty more. They'll have a list for next year. Don't worry.
All right. Let's give these words a send-off in a creative way. Joe, why don't you start us off?
All right. George Santos thinks he is the GOAT when the feeling is he will be quite quitting when he is in the house. He defends his claims to the point he is gaslighting everyone. Moving forward, it's going to be an inflection point whenever he makes a claim, wondering if the claim is real or fabricated. And this man got elected into the House. Does that make sense? This is the political climate we are in. We have people that overlook and think that it's amazing that he is in the House because they share the same views as him, irregardless that he is a pathological liar. And when you say you voted for them on policy and don't care about their character, absolutely is the answer you get from these people. But after all, we have seen it. It is what it is.
Very good. All right, Pip, what do you got?
Okay. One second. Tapping. I used to be the GOAT of grocery shopping. I would shop late, irregardless of the day of the week. And when the store was empty, I was amazing, whipping through the aisles, absolutely killing my shopping list. Coffee, chicken, rolls, salad, every aisle at my command. But the inflection point came during the pandemic. Everything changed, and all of the other workers seemed to have changed. The hours for shopping were lessened. Does that make any sense? Especially when you want to keep away from others. And the workers that were there were trying to gaslight us into thinking that the self-checkout is better by working slower than ever. I swear, some of the cashiers were quite quitting during my order. Moving forward, I may just have to order it for delivery. It is what it is.
Very good. This is my poem / rap, whatever the hell you want. Tribute to the New York Jets. Your New York football Jets, 12 years not making the playoffs. The Jets failing to make the playoffs is what it is, because Failure Inc. is the name of their biz. Absolutely breaking hearts is what they do. They are the goat of stinking. P to the U. They will always fail, regardless of the owner. They take your breath away like the virus corona. I ask you, peeps, does that make sense? They have as much game as VP Mike Pence. The way they lose is utterly amazing. Watching them play is a form of frat hazing. But all the jokes aside, they really are exciting. Nah, not really. I'm just gaslighting. Some say that the way they play is like quiet quitting. I say no, son. That's the bed they're shitting.
Oh God!
They are always going back, never moving forward. They're more rotten than a November apple orchard. Cut down that tree and roll it into a joint. Losing six in a row is my inflection point. So kids, don't ever root for the Jets, or you too will have a life filled with regrets. There you go.
Very good. Very good. I like that.
When are they ever going to get a what's the deal with the quarterback situation?
Is this your new Seinfeld bit? What's the deal with the Jets quarterback situation? Who are these zilches? Is that what we're doing?
Yes.
How the fuck should I know? They didn't ask me. They didn't ask me what. I mean.
Oh, man. You should read them their poem.
it's miserable. It's miserable, but whatever. Whatever. All right. Let's take our final break. We'll come back and do some scamming scammers. On the break, we have new music from Alpha Neutral with Too Push and Too Posh. Too Posh. And the Bridget Kelly Band with Heartbreakin', the Heartbreakin' Blues. And you can learn more about both those artists at